This is Brittany Blackwell, host of the Resilient Teacher Podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, along with this podcast. Each show on the network is independently owned, and the views expressed may not represent those of other podcasts. For the best education podcasts, visit edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back. Steve here, and today I'm talking with Kat Newport, ACC-CCP. She is the founder of Oculus, Inc. and the author of the book, Smart Conflict, Turning Disputes into Growth Opportunities. If you have ever had a disagreement or issue at work or home, you're going to learn so many good ideas about conflict resolution. Awesome talk. Something to learn for everyone. Thanks for listening. Oh, by the way, before you go, it'd be so cool if you helped out the podcast. And hey, I've got a couple ideas on how you could. One would be tell a friend and share the links. Another would be, you could go to my website and leave a review and subscribe. And how about this one? How about click on the link on my website homepage to buy me a coffee? By doing this, you could donate a dollar or two to help me address the costs associated with producing the podcast. Thanks so much. You are awesome. Enjoy the show.
So we end up having this conflict over resources. And what I see a lot of times is folks either you avoiding the conflict by, I want to talk to your manager. So they completely sidestep the conversation they need to have with the person that they're in conflict with and go above their heads.
It's the Education Podcast, your favorite show, with lots of groovy guests and they share what they know. So crank it up to 10 and let your neighbors know that here's another show with Dr. Steve Mileto. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. Teaching, learning, leading K-12. With Dr. Steve Mileto.
Kat Newport, ACC-CCP, author of Smart Conflict, Turning Disputes into Growth Opportunities, and founder of Oculus, Inc., is a dynamic force in leadership evolution, conflict coaching, and personal awareness. With a fervent commitment to using conflict as a catalyst for growth and innovation, Kat empowers individuals and organizations to thrive. Her charismatic approach, anchored in authenticity, resiliency, and momentum, is shaped by her long career in national director-level leadership. Through Oculus, Inc., Kat provides a transformative journey, individually coaching leaders and shaping comprehensive programs that leave a lasting, positive impact on individuals and organizations. Kat, thanks so much for being on the show today, and say hi to everyone.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a great honor to be here.
Well, glad to have you here. And, we're going to focus on some aspects of your book, Smart Conflict, Turning Disputes into Growth Opportunities. But let's first start by talking about something I read about you where you said you're a recovering executive turned conflict resolution enthusiast. What's a recovering executive?
I moved out of the corporate realm back in February of 2023. So for those of us who've sort of worked at that corporate level and have been on that hamster on that grind, it's almost like coming down from that pie, trying to get away from that must move forward at all costs kind of deal. So recovering executive is out of corporate into entrepreneurship, which is a different kind of hamster wheel and grind, my dad. That's what that recovering executive means.
Gotcha. I appreciate that. And I think there's a lot of people who listen that will identify with what you're talking about. So good stuff. All right. So I got to say this, surely there have to be easier ways to succeed in this world. Why'd you take on conflict resolution? Because that's an interesting area to go to.
One of those strange folks who sort of steps into conflict. When I started my career many moons ago, conflict was something that I struggled with. I struggled with it a great deal. I came out of the generation of be seen and not heard, be the good girl, stay quiet. And I was working in an environment that was heavily male dominated, heavily dynamic, very move forward. So I had a lot of learning curves, I guess, a lot of learning curves and ups and downs and fluctuations with trying to figure out how to engage with conflict in a way that would move me forward in my career, move the projects I was working on forward, and get relationships stabilized. And it took me a really long time to figure it out and find things that worked for me. So once I got out of that corporate world, I'm like, oh, I cannot be the only person who has had this journey and struggle, or who might be in the middle of this journey and struggle. That's what made me jump into, if I can help just one person, I'll be happy.
I love that. I love that because let me tell you, I mean, there's a lot of roles that people have in this world. And I just know in the ones I've been in that a lot of times you're going, all right, somebody, you know, before the door is open and before we sit down, you know, with the person, you're saying a quiet thought to yourself about, okay, please just let me have patience, or I need someone to give me some good advice right before I have this meeting, or, you know, anyway, you know, it's like, please stop me from putting my foot in my mouth, you know, anything like that.
Exactly.
I love it. All right. So before we go there, you're the founder of Oculus Incorporated. Tell us about Oculus. I mean, what's its purpose? Could you share some of the services that are provided?
Absolutely. So I started Oculus to provide individuals and organizations access to the learning that I had. So Oculus provides individuals with conflict coaching. So unpacking the narrative you might have about your how to approach conflict and what conflict is so that you can move. I also work with organizations providing facilitated workshops and training sessions to go through how we can build a team or organization that thrives on conflict, because every organization has conflict. Where there are two people, there will be conflict. And how to work with that in the most positive way.
I love it. And you are so right. Where there are two people, yes, you have, because if you only got one person, there's conflict, there's problems with that. There's another problem, I think.
Side of my skill set.
Gotcha. All right. So why'd you write Smart Conflict, Turning Disputes into Growth Opportunities? I mean, there had to be something that really kind of said, I got to make sure I write this.
This was my, I've got to do something. So once I transitioned out of corporate, I found myself with a little bit of time on my hands. You know, I was working 80-hour weeks and, you know, used to that go, go, go mentality. And it was one of those things that I've always wanted to write a book. I've always complained that I never have time to write a book. Let's write a book.
Nice.
You can see I'm always forward leaning, a little bit, you know, busy all the time. In less than a year, it went from, gee, let's write a book, to being published. So yeah, it was a journey.
Very cool. So, all right. So let's talk about what kind of get into what your topic is here. I mean, what are some common workplace conflicts and how are these typically dealt with by the staff member and not how you wish they were dealt with? I mean, how are they typically dealt with?
Okay. When you're in a workplace, you hang out with these folks 40 hours a week. Most of your waking hours are actually spent with your coworkers and not necessarily your family. So even though these people aren't very close to you on a relationship level, just the quantity of time you spend with them creates very impactful conflicts, or conflicts that can become very impactful. So we've got conflicts over resources. So I've got my project, you've got your project, we both need IT to help us with our project, but I was here first, I need them more than you do, mine's more attached to the P&L, you know, so we're fighting over a resource, whatever that resource may be, somebody's time, some, you know, extra budget for whatever. So we end up having this conflict over resources. And what I see a lot of times is folks either you avoiding the conflict by, I want to talk to your manager. So they completely sidestep the conversation they need to have with the person that they're in conflict with and go above their heads. Or I end up seeing the desperate need to make themselves feel better. We end up in an environment where gossip is prevalent. So gossip can be good and gossip can be bad. I see more bad gossip than I see good conflict or gossip, I'm afraid. So with the good gossip, this is me talking about my feelings about the situation, trying to find my way forward. And we've all experienced the bad gossip where I'm talking about Sally and how Sally needs to fix herself. And Sally did these terrible things. And have you heard about Sally's boyfriend? You know, all of the things to make myself feel better. So we end up seeing that gossip in the workplace that can really undermine cohesion. It undermines the ability to work together and growth and innovation. So those are two of the big ones that I see when we have the colleague to colleague conflict.
Thanks. I've actually had, you know, it's interesting as a as a director. Now we can go back into other things because we'll talk a little bit later about, because my audience is educators of all sorts, and from superintendents to classroom teachers to people who want to be teachers to instructional personnel at universities and such as well. One of the things that, so I got that world to talk about, but one of the things that's interesting in the world in which I'm in, I've been a director of an organization where, and by the way, anybody listening, not the one I'm in right now. All right. So, but I've actually had to have a conversation with bringing people together and saying, okay, we need to have a talk because this is what's I understand is going on. And number one, we have to talk about if you gossip, then I'm going to let you go. And, you know, I've had to have that type of talk. And then I've also had to say, this is what I understand has been the norm and it will not be anymore. So please take this as a warning. And I handled it like that. We moved on, and whether that was a, like a shot across the bow, that's what I was hoping it was, to say, let's all move on past this so we can get on. But, it's an interesting thing that, you have to try and figure out how to deal with it. And one of the things that I wanted to make sure I asked you is, I think you can talk with us a little bit about what it costs an organization when you have the conflict, if it's not addressed.
If we look at just the United States on its own, and I'm taking some fairly old numbers, the 2008, so we're pre-pandemic here, for lost hours and hours invested into conflict management and legal fees and mediation fees and all of this good stuff, hold on to your hat. Per annum, so every year, it costs organizations in the United States about $300 billion.
Wow.
That was a B. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. And so, and which lends itself to, it's got to be addressed. And if it's not, I mean, if we're costing our organization this much money, nevertheless, all the other types of things like time, anxiety that's created. I don't want to work with this person. You have to go to work. You're the boss, whatever, or the people, wherever they are in the place, they avoid. I mean, I've seen any number of things where you're like, why are you over here during the day? I've actually asked a staff member, why are you over here when your place should really be over there? And it turned out they had to tell me that they were having there was some difficulty between somebody that they had to share that space with. So where I want to go with this is that in your experience, I mean, could managers use training in addressing this type of workplace conflict? I mean, let's talk a little bit about that.
Talk a little bit. We could talk an hour. So depending on the study you look at, the numbers I have are anywhere between 38 and 42% of a manager's time is spent dealing with some sort of conflict. Be it their conflict, be it somebody else's conflict, be it project conflict, be it whatever conflict. So anywhere between 38 and 42% of your time. That's a huge chunk of your time. When organizations train, this is helpful, getting training to do what you do 42% of your time. However, only about 40% of organizations actually provide their staff with conflict management training. So you're spending 42% of your time trying to do something you have never, ever been trained to do.
Which goes well, right?
It's $300 billion well.
It's just insane, especially because with all the priorities that organizations have, I think it's interesting that at no point is there usually some sort of time spent on helping them figure out how to address conflict. Or, in education world, a lot of times, one of the things that happens is that there's not training for teachers or building administrators. And matter of fact, the first time you have that meeting, you're going, oh, this is going to be fun. All right, let me see, and we're actually not talking about the fun ones here. The fun ones, you know that you're going to have, and you may not schedule the other one until later, but eventually you're going to have that meeting. And it's, that lack of training is something that it's not just anxiety producing. It's also, I would think, causing people to quit.
You're not wrong. When we're looking at conflict and what the outcome of conflict is in an organization, attrition is high on that list. I am no longer working here. Again, it depends on what study you're reading, but anywhere between 83 and 90% of folks are saying that they've dealt with a toxic person in the workplace. That's a huge number just to have that kind of personality conflict. We also hear about those Sunday night blues where you're just thinking about Monday morning going, whoa.
Yes.
You know, people are going to want to avoid that. They're going to want to move on. So there's definitely that attrition piece that comes into play. We've also got to take a look at not just people wanting to leave the organization and choosing to leave the organization. We have, once human resources gets involved or poorly managed conflict gets to a point where you have no choice but to release an individual. You have no choice but to fire somebody. So we have all the things that go with that. So you've got severance pays, you've got packages out, you've got unions that you've got to deal with. You've got all these things that kind of go into that, where if we had just caught the conflict when it sparked and dealt with it when it sparked, we so probably would not have gotten here. So the training can save your organization a lot of money, hands down.
That's awesome. One of the things it's difficult to, if you're in the management or leader's role when you're working with, because we can come back to the idea that you also have conflict with any number of type of entities. But one of the things that you might run into is that you think you said what you think they may have heard what you thought you said. Does that make sense?
The biggest universal misconception, the thought that communication has actually occurred.
There you go. Yes. when you do training and stuff like this, do you run into people talking about how they deliver thoughts?
Oh, 100%. 100%. When you jump into a conflict situation, most folks don't jump into it until they can't take it anymore. Emotionally just cannot take it. So they're now so angry that they're just going to pop off. Or they're so sad and so upset that they have to say something. So they're operating from that very murky emotional place where the words might not convey the thoughts, but more the emotion. We end up with that challenge. When you come into that conversation with that emotional language, you know, Steve, you make me so angry. you're going to automatically go on the defensive. You can't hear me anymore because you're automatically saying, well, that's not right because that's not what I intended. That's not what I meant. Where is this lady coming from? So couching your words and actually knowing what the conflict is about becomes very important. SMART conflict is actually an acronym. The book was built off a workshop that I had started back in my corporate career. And the S actually stands for situation. Understand what you're in conflict about. And I know it sounds silly, but most folks haven't got a clue. They're going in to try to feel better. They're going in, I've been in an organization where I was supporting mediation, and this married couple was actually getting a divorce, and they were arguing over a crock pot, a slow cooker.
Nice.
I don't know how often you use your slow cooker, but so they were arguing over a slow cooker. This was what the argument was about. And you can't see my air quotes, but this is what the argument was about. And after unpacking and sitting with it, you know, the slow cooker actually represented, you know, Sunday dinners and just sitting down as a family and eating together and creating memories. And they were actually fighting over the dissolution of the family that they thought they were going to have. It had nothing to do with a crock pot, had everything to do with the sadness and grief of the loss of a relationship.
Wow.
So understanding the situation helps a lot. And it does take some unpacking.
Most definitely. You know, it's, I worked with some colleagues from a long time ago, and I really thought that one day we were going to find, you know, what was left of somebody in that office, because they had to share an office. And not only did they share an office, their desks were near each other, because now they chose to set it up that way, but it was made better use of the room, and their desks were next to each other. And the one kept leaving the other one little stickies saying, please keep your stuff on your side. On your side, you're on your desk. And so the little stickies constantly. And I had to have a conversation to say, okay, I think we're old enough here to be past this stage of something like this. And, you know, you don't expect to say, you keep your stuff on your side and you keep your stuff on your side. And, you know, let's figure out how to get along. And instead, that's, we had to have that, those conversations. I really thought I'd walk in there one day and, you know, there'd be, they both taught, use different instruments and stuff with what they did. So I thought for sure we'd see something smashed over somebody's head or something one day.
The note thing resonates so well with me, because I remember going back, I used to live in a duplex and I was very young at the time, just out of college, had a brand new baby at home. And I had written a note to the neighbor to keep it down. Instead of knocking on the door going, look, I got the baby at home. That did not go well. I ended up with a shredded note in front of my door.
Nice, nice.
This is classic conflict avoidance. I'm scared of what you will say or do if I talk to you directly. So I'm just going to leave you a sticky note and hope it goes away. So this is that emotional piece. I'm scared to have a conflict, and how to engage with that, which actually brings us into the M of smart conflict, which is measure your emotional response. Know what your emotions are and what they're telling you to do. Because when you're looking at emotions, they're signposts on the road that you need to pay attention to something. They're not all encompassing. They're not who you are. They're not what you are. It's like putting your hand on a hot stove going, ow, that pain is the emotion, right? I'm so angry. Well, why are you angry? Because they've outraged me. Why have they outraged you? Because it wasn't fair. Well, what wasn't fair? You know, there's layers to this. It's not just, oh, you've enraged me, which is where most of us start and end a conflict.
Which solves nothing, right?
Absolutely nothing.
You know, it is interesting, because that's one of the things I used to, when I was a high school principal, one of the things I'd do is I would ask one of my assistant principals to meet with me if I thought there was going to be some sort of angst, something was going to happen in this meeting that I would, and part of their role in meeting with me in the meeting was to, even though I could never get anyone to do this, I wanted them to kick me under the table if I started to, you know, need to back off, or if, like wrestling, you know, professional wrestling where you do tag team, you know, the idea they kick me and then they would, you know, I'd shut up and then they would join. And instead they would say things like, why don't we tap each other or say something, you know, I'll tap your arm or something like this, or how about we say something funny that, that then knows, hey, I'm going to take over here. But sometimes that worked, because, there's a time in my career where, you know, it's, if you came in with fire, I'm coming back at you with fire. And I learned that's not good either. That's
you end up with a conflagration. Everything's just a flame.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that would make for a good movie sequence there.
Right? It's very visual. This is where training for leaders to mediate conflict comes into play. I also do mediation mostly on estate matters, if you can believe it. Family, death, and money. What could go wrong?
Right, nothing. Nothing. None at all.
So being a leader, sometimes you do have to get into the middle of it and go, well, did you hear what they said? They said that they really appreciated that you did this. What did you hear them say? You know, really trying to bridge that gap, you know, put the flames down a little bit so you can see what's at the center, because the flames are oftentimes a shield. I don't want you to get too close. I'm hurt. It's easier for you to see my anger or my rage than it is for you to see that I'm just absolutely terribly hurt by what you've done, or by the situation. So, you know, being a mediator in that situation as a leader becomes very important. How do we pat down the flames a little bit without injecting ourselves into the conflict? and bring these two individuals together in a relationship that will move forward in a healthy and positive way.
I love that. And by the way, this was not in my family, but this was something that I witnessed that had to do with a whole nother family, and it all had to do with toy trains. And you know, someone had died in the family who had collected them for a long time, over many years, and about to rip the world apart over the toy trains. And it's like, boy, I'm pretty sure that person who left them would have thrown them in the garbage if he'd known what what nonsense he created on the other end of his life.
Absolutely. When you look at estate management, when it comes to conflict, building a conflict resilience estate begins when you write your will. What do your relationships look like right now? How do you want the relationships inside your family to look like after you're gone? I often akin to writing a good will and communicating that will, actually talk, not writing notes, not letting the lawyer do it after you're dead, actually communicating what's in that will while you're still alive, and you can resolve any issues so it doesn't become World War III over a train set.
Nice. I also am aware of another family. Just know some of this could be, hypothetically speaking, but another family that one person would get mad and say, fine, I'm going to take you out of my will, and then go do it. I mean, that lawyer made a lot of money off that man. I mean, it's like every time he turned around, he was taking one child out of his will and putting another, you know, you're in my favor now, you're not, you know, and that type of thing. And it's like, what? Oof. Yeah.
And here we are using it as a tool to gain capitulation as opposed to working on the relationship. You're going to do what I tell you to do, or I'm going to punish you. But what exactly is the problem? What need is not being met in the moment from that child that makes you say, nope, you're out of my will? You know, it's all about relationships. And I know it sounds silly, but that's what conflict is. It's about finding that way forward in that relationship. So kudos to the lawyer, but so sad for that family.
Very much so. It does make me wonder if maybe the lawyer was goading some of that on or not. But hey, that's another story, another movie. So, all right. So, one of the things that you talk about is called conflict coaching. Can you give us a little insider look at that?
Conflict coaching is actually sitting down with someone and doing that unpacking. So over a series of sessions, we'll sit down. Who are you having conflicts with? What are the emotions that come up when you have conflict? What is your ideal sort of way to manage conflict look like? What do you want these relationships to be? So we do a lot of unpacking on all the stories we've gotten about conflict, because the minute we pop out of the womb and into our families, we're getting all these messages about conflict. For good or for ill, we are getting these messages. This is how you deal with it. You know, stop your crying or I'll give you a reason to cry. You know, all the messages we got, you can tell I'm a Gen Xer. All these messages we got, right? Nice. So sometimes we do have to really look at those and find out what habits have I collected on dealing with conflict that I need to keep, because some of them are good. And which ones do I really need to not keep and find some other way to do this? So there's definitely that. And then we move into action planning. So when you next have a conflict with this person, how do you want to deal with it? What are the words you want to say? What is the emotion you wish to convey? What is the emotion you want to work out beforehand? If you do start to get emotional, what are you going to do? What's your tool in here? So it's giving folks one-on-one the opportunity to explore their resources, their inner tools, their inner strength, and bringing that out in an action plan that they can carry forward.
Love it. And very nice. And I gotta tell you, yeah, I could have used a lot of that when, as the kid of divorced parents, and then, just in my work world too. So there's many times, and, I think any type of working on learning about how to have the conversations with people and dealing with relationships and all that, navigating just talk is so important. Good stuff. All right. So are there keys to addressing workplace conflict? I mean, and also could you share your part that lends itself, you know, in the title, it says that you can use these as growth opportunities. So, you know, I got to find out about that.
Your keys to workplace conflict can be summed up in three words. It's not really hard. It's not really difficult. All of this gut churning anxiety, I can't do this, is summed up in proactivity. Try to get there before it blows up. Proactive, positive, and empathetic. Not words you normally hear associated with conflict. But we're trying to change a frame here. We're trying to change a lens. Proactive conflict. Don't leave the note. Talk to the person. Don't ignore the person and hope everything comes out better next week. Engage with the person. Don't take them out of your will. Talk to them. So there's that proactivity piece. There's also positivity. Not going in with the fires blazing, with the anger and the rage. Going in with, this is what I need to move forward. Forward being the operative word, because relationships need to go forward. Conflict goes bad when you get stuck in it. Conflict moving forward is where the creativity comes into play. And of course, empathetic. All conflict's about relationship. If you're not being empathetic to your conflict conversation partner, you're going nowhere. All you're doing is pounding your hand on a boardroom table saying, this is my way, this is or the highway kind of deal. There's no empathy there and you're not moving forward. So proactive, positive, and empathetic would be the three sort of keywords for addressing workplace conflict. Tying into growth opportunities, everybody gets told to think outside the box. The challenge here is every human being on the planet has a box. They're nice. Inside a box made up of their own experiences and their own thoughts and all the stuff they've learned. And it's a great box. And I can only think outside of my box. Nice. It's the only box I've got. But if I talk to you and listen to your perspective and where you're coming from and what your thoughts are and figure out where the edges of your box are, we now have doubled the size of the box we can think outside of. We now have your idea to fix the problem, my idea to fix the problem, and Sally's idea to fix the problem. We are three times ahead. This is where innovation and growth comes from. I can give you my opinion and I can give you answers all day long. One opinion, one perspective, based on only my experience. If you enter into that conflict proactively, positively, and empathetically, you open the opportunity for understanding and growth in an organization and in your relationships, period.
That's awesome. I love that because, you know, it is something that, you know, if I like the description of we all have our own little box, if we're, who knows where we're going if we think just outside of our own and we're not realizing what the other side is, might be thinking about, or, you know, that empathy thing can be very powerful. And, you know, it's funny. One of the craziest things I ever experienced was where you could, a meeting was getting ready to happen, and I'm a high school principal, and I like to describe this as Elvis saved my life, and I'm talking about the Elvis, the king, all right? And now he was nowhere in the room except my little shrine. I'm an Elvis fan, and I keep a little shrine to Elvis, and it's my ticket to Graceland and a couple little baubles and things like this, and some of that is meant, and also I have a little candle that I burn twice a year. When somebody asks me, it's always put in a little place where it makes somebody say, you light that candle? That's what I'm looking for, right? So then they won't question what planet I'm on, but say yes, because he's coming back, you know. And well, my point is that this meeting's about to happen, and two parents arrive. They really think I'm evil incarnate because I'm supporting the assistant principal with the consequences for their child's actions. So they come in and you could cut the air with a knife. It was just like, oh, so bad. And just as we got into my office and getting ready to sit down, I have this whole round table where we're not really sitting across something. And I'm using that and kind of trying to be cheery. And it's like, this is not working. And actually the one parent is large enough that I'm thinking, yeah, I might might going to die today. So, they suddenly call me out in the front office because they need somebody out there. So I said, can you excuse me just a second? I need to go out there. And in that time when I'm gone, because it's only like a couple of minutes, I come back and the gentleman's looking at my Elvis shrine. And he says, you like Elvis? And I said, yes. And I said, you see my ticket? I went there. And I said, that was where I went for my second honeymoon. I got to go there. And I'm a storyteller, so I shared probably way more details than what he really cared to know. But that's why I say Elvis saved my life, because it was funny because the whole demeanor of the room had changed. They had gone to Graceland also for a honeymoon and for a celebration of their marriage. And next thing you know is we were able to talk about what we were both interested in, which was helping their child see the consequences of his actions. But it's just funny because all that lesson taught me to listen to the people who are angry at me. Sometimes you find out more.
Very much so. Finding that sliver of common ground just cracks the door open up enough that you're seeing the other person as a human. It's very easy to dehumanize someone else, particularly if you're dealing with the organization. You know, you call the telephone company and it's, oh, those jerks. And you're screaming at the telephone company, but it's really Johnny on the other end of the phone going, wow, I'm having a bad day at work. You know, once you can open that up and say, okay, I'm actually talking to another human being, someone's child, you know, or we both have a common interest. We both love Elvis. We both, you know, like to sew. We both, whatever it is, it creates an opportunity to bond and then move forward with positivity. So that was a great example.
Thanks. And then, by the way, I learned a lot from that one example, which made me kind of back off the whole fire versus fire thing. I'll let you analyze me another time. You know, Kat, as a former high school principal, I had many opportunities to try to resolve conflicts, some successful and some not so much. If you had a chance to talk with an auditorium of school principals about conflict resolution and you were the closing speaker for the day, what's something you would want them talking to one another about when they left the auditorium?
Word intent. What is the intent of that parent who's coming into your office? What is the intent of that teacher who's in conflict with the other teacher? What is your intent when you're engaging with the parents? What is your intent when you're engaging with your staff? Know where you're coming from. Know where they're coming from. And this intent ties heavily back into that empathetic or empathy view. Know where you're coming from and have a good idea on where you're going. Know the beginning and have a plan for the end, knowing there's going to be negotiation in the middle, but have a plan for the end.
Love it. Great advice. Good stuff. All right. So we're starting to get close to the end. And before we finish up, one of the things I got to ask you about is we got to talk about families and conflicts. I mean, do you have any thoughts about avoiding, addressing, escaping, or resolving family issues? And you're talking to someone who's been warned by his spouse, you know, when we go for the holidays, you better behave.
That's a good advice for everybody who shows up for the holiday then. So families are tough. Families, they're in that inner circle, right? So when we have conflicts with them, they're a lot more emotionally impactful. So that brings up all the fears and all of the emotional baggage that goes along with that. That said, same kind of thing applies here. Be proactive with it. If you're going to Christmas and every time you go to Christmas, Granny always tells you how fat you are and you really don't want to hear it from Granny this year. You just don't want to hear it from Granny this year. It behooves you to say, I know you love me, Granny, but I'm not comfortable with this topic. Why don't we go play canasta? Nice. You know, here's my boundary and let's go do something else. You know, and when 20 minutes later, when Granny brings it up again, Granny, I told you, I don't want to talk about my weight. I'm happy the way I look. I'm going to go over and grab some food. Can I get you something? It's that establishment of that boundary with family, that yes, we are close. Yes, we are intimate, but there's a certain way I expect to be treated. And talking to my family about my weight is not, no.
Bad.
I pick an example, but no. So there's that boundary and that constant communication of that boundary with love and empathy. Because granny's not going to remember, because, you know, it's when I was a girl, it was 3 days after I had the baby, I was back in shape. Good for you, granny, but no. Don't want to talk about it. This is me. This is my life. So it's that empathetic and that love and that repetitiveness of boundaries that helps. And boundaries aren't a bad thing. They're not, you know, concrete walls topped with razor wire. They're these hedges that grow and move as you grow and move and as your family relationships evolve. But it has to be communicated, which can be terrifying. Well, what if granny hates me? Can you just tell granny to stop talking about your love handles? I'm pretty sure she's not going to hate you for that. If so, there's probably bigger family problems afoot. But making sure those boundaries start. And if you've never done it before, it's going to be A, intensely uncomfortable. B, your family's going to think you've lost your mind. And C, you do have to persevere. Because that first beginning ramp up of boundary setting can be very uncomfortable.
Very much so, but great advice. I love that. I love that. And for all of us, you have a couple months to practice now. So before you get into those situations again, good stuff. And thank you so much for going there and talking about it. Because I definitely could not leave this topic of conflict resolution without going with family issues. So good. I appreciate it. You know, Kat, as we're finishing up, if someone wanted to learn more, get a copy of your book or reach out to you, where would you send them?
The easiest place to get a hold of me is on my website. So www.smartconflictbook.com. All the information is there about the book. All the information is there about Oculus Inc. and conflict coaching and training and mediation and all the good stuff. So smartconflictbook.com.
Excellent. I'll have that in the show notes. So it's easy for them to find and click on to go to your website. I got two last questions that I like to ask my guests. And, you know, one of them, this one fits a little bit more just because I'm having this conversation with you. So we're gonna start there. So sometimes when work or family issues or life just seem too overwhelming, what do you do to overcome the feeling of quitting or giving up?
So this talks about resiliency. So a couple of things go on when you talk about resiliency. There's the pausing and understanding that the feeling you're having is valid. And I explained this a little bit earlier in the podcast, where you put your hand on a stove, that pain is telling you, move your hand. So when you want to give up, it's telling you something needs to fundamentally changed at this point. You've really got to take a look at something and something has to change. You got to move your hand.
I like that.
So honor that feeling. This is where self-care becomes really important. And a lot of us really struggle with self-care, making sure you're getting the sleep and the food and all the things. And I know I sound like your mother right now, but it's true. It is so true. So take some time for care. Even if that means you take a couple of mental health days, you take a couple of sick days, just to recenter and go, okay, we can come back to this. And then move your hand. Take the action that moves you forward. Remember, getting stuck in something makes it bad. Moving forward makes it growth.
So I like that. Would be my advice. Thank you so much for sharing that. I like that. That's especially it's always good to remind someone, you know, and at some point you need to move your hand out of the fire or off of the hot stove or whatever it is. So, but thank you. And, you know, so often we get stuck in those worlds where it's just like, it just feels like everything's happening at once. How can I get through this? The last question I have for you is this. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If so, who was it? And what would you say if given the chance to say thank you?
Two teachers pop to mind, one from my university days and one from my much younger time. So we'll go with the much younger time. And if there's time, we can go to my university one. I'd have to say it was my sixth grade teacher, Mrs. Glennie. I was a very different learner. I was a quiet kid. I was shy. I never really talked to anybody. And I think she was the first teacher who said, hold my hand and let's go. It's going to be okay. So well beyond the mathematics, well beyond the reading, well beyond the nuts and bolts of teaching, I think she was the first one to really slow down and say, look, there's social skills that we need to work on. Let's work on them together. So I think that's the first one that I'd want to share.
Nice. So go ahead with the second.
In the university, we had a teacher, it was an introductory course, surprisingly enough, and the teacher was nicknamed The Butcher.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Dr. Reverend Deacon, The Butcher. this introductory class, if you only had to take it once, it was a miracle. And if you passed with anything more than a C minus, you were exalted. I think that teacher taught me that it's my own perception of what I can and cannot do that's going to push me forward or hold me back. We had a lot of conversations about The Butcher. And like, oh, I'm going to fail. Everything's going to be awful. I don't even know why I'm writing this paper. You know, there was all that kind of chatter that went around it. And it was, I know this is terrifying. You know, Daniel into the lion's den kind of moment. Nice. But I'm going to turn in the paper. I'm going to do what I can do. And I actually got through on first round. So it was my lowest mark of all my university courses, but I did get through first round.
Yay. Wow. That's rough stuff right there.
It was a learning. It was a learning.
Very much so, I can imagine. Thank you so much for sharing. Kat, thank you for sharing your book, Smart Conflict, Turning Disputes into Growth Opportunities, and sharing about your business, Oculus Inc., and discussing conflict and conflict resolution. What an awesome topic and focus, and I'm wishing you the best in all you do.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a great conversation.
Hey, you have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast to help you help kids achieve their dreams. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a member of the podcast network based in Canada called Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio, your voice is right here. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Hey, thanks for listening. It would be awesome if you visited my website at stephenmaletto.com and connected with me, left a review, and listened to more episodes. And by the way, you could also share it with your friends, with your family, and your colleagues. Thanks so much. You're awesome.